Welcome to RAPcast, the official podcast of Rheumatology Advanced Practice Providers. I'm your host, Amanda Mixon, and the current president of RAP. Today, we have an exciting and informative episode lined up for you titled Decoding IL-17, Comparing and Contrasting IL-17A and IL-17F Inhibition. In the world of rheumatology, understanding the nuances of cytokine inhibition is crucial for optimizing patient care. IL-17A and IL-17F are key players in inflammatory processes, and differentiating between their inhibition can have significant implications for efficacy as well as safety outcomes. To delve into this topic, I'm thrilled to welcome our guest, Will Saffield, an esteemed member of the RAP faculty and a leading expert in our field. Will can help us navigate the complexities of IL-17 inhibitors, shedding light on their mechanisms, clinical applications, and the latest research. Will, for our guests who haven't had the pleasure of meeting you, can you give us a quick introduction?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a nurse practitioner in Lincoln, Nebraska. I've been in rheumatology since about 2017, and I kind of just fell back into it by accident, and as a cognitive specialty goes, compared to what I used to do in the hospital in an acute setting, I really, really love it. And it's like detective work, and even issues like this, it's getting to kind of the minutiae of the pathogenesis of it and why one would care. But that's the kind of stuff I like. And then when you know that and you can kind of convey it to patients and other clinicians in a way that makes them understand why something is different or why they should treat one condition another way, it's... And plus, too, it's just came out with so much new stuff over the last like couple decades. I mean, the rheumatologist I work with is in his mid-70s, and he started at a time that he was practicing as a rheumatologist since a year after I was born. So, I mean, he's seen the progression from like your expectation on a daily basis is that you're just going to watch people become disabled by the disease, and now they have like, can you know, treatments that you won't even know they have the condition by looking at their joints or anything else regarding like skin disease or a multitude of the things we treat.
It's so true. I feel like even in the time that I've been doing this, which is now going on my 18th year, it's crazy to see like how this progression, this evolution. I mean, we don't see people coming in wheelchairs anymore. I mean, again, I know you and I have had this conversation, but like even just people coming in and getting their gold shots, you know, like it's so incredible. And it makes me feel so fortunate to be in medicine at this time and still have, you know, quite a long time in my career left to even see things, you know, evolve from here. And you totally have found your niche in rheumatology, like having gotten to know you and just how cerebral you are. I think this is definitely the field that fits best for you. Great. And we're so lucky also to have you even on this episode, just because I can't think of somebody better to help us really understand this in a way that I think, again, I mean, somebody like me that will be able to really take it and say, okay, that's what that means, because I've heard of IL-17A versus F, but not quite really understanding like why that's important or why that could have implications, you know, etc.
Mm-hmm. Well, and IL-17, and just delving into it, IL-17A and IL-17F, they're just fundamentally key cytokines involved in the pathogenesis of various rheumatological diseases, including RA, psoriatic arthritis, axSpA. But both cytokines are produced by Th17 cells, which are CD4 cells predominantly, and they play a crucial role in mediating inflammation and tissue damage. They're a specialized subset of CD4 T cells, the Th17s that produce them. But they're integral in protective immunity and the pathogenesis of autoimmune and inflammatory disease, characterized by the production of IL-17, A, and F, and a lot of other pro-inflammatory cytokines like IL-21, IL-22, granulocyte, macrophage, colony-stimulating factor. But that was all those things we've kind of investigated in clinical trials with different drugs as to why they may or may not work. But IL-17A is definitely the more extensively studied and known to upregulate pro-inflammatory cytokines, chemokines, matrix metalloproteinases, along with recruitment of neutrophils, to sites of inflammation contributing to that chronic inflammation and joint destruction you see in our conditions and inflammatory diseases, and kind of those pathogenic ways that they do that, recruitment and activation of immune cells, a synergistic interaction with other cytokines like TNF, IL-1, amplifying the response, positive feedback loops to create further promotion of that Th17 differentiation that you can sustain the inflammation, along with tissue-specific effects. So like keratinocytes, fibroblasts, endothelial cells. But IL-17, while it's less potent than IL-17A, has a similar but quantitatively less effect on target cells, particularly the synoviocytes, and those are the main players in the synovial membrane producing our synovial fluid around the joints and substances that promote tissue regeneration. So in RA, synoviocytes become overactive, inflamed, leading to excessive production of inflammatory molecules, damaging the joint and the cartilage. But IL-17A and F essentially can act synergistically with TNF to amplify that inflammatory response. And it's important to note that that impact upon one cellular messenger has downstream effects on others. And so this explains kind of the variation of efficacy and side effects of a certain agent regarding where and to what extent they inhibit or block messengers, whether it's at the molecule, the receptor site. But understanding their distinction and kind of the overlapping functions can help inform more effective therapeutic strategies, so that if you have a drug with dual inhibition versus one, it's going to help you better manage these chronic inflammatory conditions and marry the treatment to the patient.
Did you do all of that just on the top of your head? I'm curious.
Well, I've done it numerous times now, to the point with patients where it just seems kind of like you just rattle it off. And I don't know if they care or if they understand all of it, like in the sense of like, I'm usually seeing them redundantly. It's probably more for me, to be perfectly honest, where I just feel better that if I'm prescribing something to you, your health is the most intimate aspect of who you are. And if you inject something, you ingest something. I take a lot of responsibility for that, where another person trusts me. And so I feel like I should know it. If I don't, well, I kind of feel bad.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's very, very clear to see. And I really like how you explained it, because I think it does kind of understanding what's happening at a cellular level will then help us to understand clinically, right? So right. As you kind of see these IL-17A inhibitors comparing to those with 17F in the clinical practice, like what does that mean when I say that? And I guess I would further expand to say, are there specific conditions where you might pick one over another?
Right. And then that distinction between the IL-17A and F is relevant because they have overlapping but non-redundant roles in disease pathogenesis. So the dual inhibition of IL-17A and F has been shown to be more effective in reducing inflammation than targeting IL-17A alone. And that's by numerous mechanisms, whether it's suppression of IL-6 downstream along with IL-8 production in synovial fibroblasts. But it's also suggests that IL-17F contributes independently to the inflammatory environment because that blockade also provides additional benefit. The most recent application was phase 3B, I think, trial. It was called B-Radiant, but it was bimekizumab, which is an IL-17A and F inhibitor, versus secukinumab, IL-17A, in patients with psoriasis. And it was very nicely and succinctly summarized in the most recent bi-monthly lit review, That's a Wrap, by a great organization. But it's bimekizumab is a monoclonal antibody that inhibits both IL-17A and F, and it was found to be superior to secukinumab regarding skin clearance. It basically achieved a PASI 100 at an earlier time point. But it's basically just speaking to why, you know, that distinction between IL-17A and F is relevant.
Absolutely. I mean, so what about the specific conditions? Do you think there's one where you'd prefer one over another?
Well, it just depends on like if it's a patient that's had, you know, TNF inhibitor failure, as long as and that kind of gets into the safety profile also too, because every patient where you're picking a certain drug, you know, everyone, one of the things I remember reading about with IL-17 inhibitors I was surprised by was the cardiovascular risk profile that I really wasn't that. It's not been promoted a lot, at least the stuff I've read, but real-world analysis from the FDA adverse reporting system over 19 years indicated that IL-17 inhibitors as a class effect, had an elevated reporting rate of MACE events compared to other psoriasis treatments, whether they were TNF inhibitors or IL-23. But the risk of MI or stroke was found to be greater in IL-17, which I didn't know. But, I mean, it makes sense. It's increased IL-17 associated with increased vascular inflammation, endothelial dysfunction, and plaque instability, which could be the theoretical mechanism contributing to those cardiovascular events. But it's also been found to be, I think just last year, they've used it in GCA, and it's been found to be pretty effective. But that's a condition in that context with GCA that's characterized by granulomatous inflammation, large, medium-sized arteries driven by Th17, so, and their production of IL-17. So if you block IL-17 in that cascade when it's actively happening, it contributes to less vascular inflammation and damage in that context. And so you prevent vision loss, aortic aneurysms, and it outweighs the cardiovascular risk. But overall, like patients they found long-term, they do have a higher incidence of MACE events. And that's just making sure the patient doesn't have coexisting diabetes, they're not smokers, they're high blood pressure, you know, they exercise, they don't have through-the-roof cholesterol. But otherwise, the other surprising thing safety profile-wise about that was the malignancy factor is that IL-17 actually was associated with a decreased risk of malignancy. So non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, colorectal cancer, hepatobiliary cancer, ovarian melanoma, basal cell. There was a global population-based cohort comparing patients with psoriasis treated with IL-17 and TNF, and they found that they had reduced risk of all those malignancies. So that was nice. And then,
absolutely.
Yeah, the common side effects otherwise are just, you know, mild to moderate nasopharyngitis. There was, as always, higher incidence of oral candidiasis. That IL-17, again, its role is essential in antifungal immunity, and it's essential for host defense against Candida albicans, and so the primary pathogen responsible for oral candidiasis. So IL-17 AF inhibitor with like bimekizumab, based on that, that's a wrap thing. It had a 19% occurrence of oral candidiasis versus 3% with secukinumab, because it's only blocking the IL-17A molecule versus both. Again, like speaking to the fact that the more you block, it has a give and take of good and bad effects. But also, too, those with IBD or inflammatory bowel disease, IL-17 is crucial in maintaining the integrity of the gut wall and the intestinal epithelial barrier, along with immune response in the gut. So they find usually within the first 6 months, like lit reviews and post-marketing data and IL-17 inhibitors, if people have a propensity for IBD and spondyloarthritis, or if they had a history of it, there's an overall low incidence that it could flare it or make it worse because of that mechanism or the weakening of that intestinal barrier. But otherwise, that's kind of this things that I think about when I'm prescribing those drugs. It's all based on the safety and, you know, is this right for the patient? How much disease burden do they have with this?
Absolutely. I mean, I kind of do the same thing. I think that's why it is so important that we understand this. Again, even down to a cellular level, so that we do know who this is best for, but also who this is not for, you know? And so kind of understanding these, you know, intricacies, I think, are super important. And I, you know, globally speaking, you know, I always look at the IL-17s as being very safe. I mean, that's been my experience anyways. You know, I see very little in terms of, you know, not tolerating or side effects, et cetera, which has been nice, especially as we get more of these to market. You know, it's kind of nice. But again, also kind of going back to, you know, understanding the difference between them, to your point about the increased candidal with, you know, the added F, you know, those kinds of things. And so I do think that that's important that we understand. And you kind of already alluded to this, but let's talk about the future. I mean, like I said, more agents being approved, you know, obviously more global use, clinical trials, et cetera, using IL-17s. You know, where do you see this role of IL-17A versus IL-17F in therapy?
Well, and some of it, otherwise, just like the GCA trial last year. And then it's also been used in hidradenitis suppurativa, which produces painful boil-like abscesses, and that can become open wounds. It's, you know, Humira has been used. It's usually more in the dermatology space that they see that and treat it. But bimekizumab, the new IL-17A and F inhibitor, Cosentyx secukinumab has been studied in it before and found to be effective. The bimekizumab was just marginally better. But I mean, for those types of patients, it's just effectively utilizing these drugs in a way that understand or implies that you understand the disease mechanism of what's going on. So like the GCA thing, hearing what I had to say about the cardiovascular risk profile would seem really confusing. Mm-hmm. If it has a higher incidence of cardiovascular risk, then why is it effective in the context of GCA, which is a vascular inflammatory, but it's characterized by that granulomatous inflammation, and it's just a different mechanism of how the inflammation is getting there. It's not so much like the destabilization of plaques or the endothelial inflammation dysfunction. It's just something that it's kind of implying that you know the mechanism of what's causing this disease and how to intervene upon it or what might work. Even like with IL-17 and IBD, a lot of the times when that first came out, some people minimize it. Other people say it's no big deal. But if the patient has it, it's something that you want to make and minimize the chance that they're going to experience it, especially if you have a multitude of agents out on the market. Because all of them too, I mean, even brodalumab, that's a receptor blocker. And I remember when that came out, it was super effective for the skin. But they actually, in the clinical trial, it never proceeded to psoriatic, because it got an FDA black box warning for suicidal ideation and depression, because there were 10 attempts on the trial and 4 completed suicides. And they don't really have a full understanding of the mechanism that contributed to that. But the main difference was like when they compared just the molecules that are being targeted, like IL-17A, like ixekizumab, secukinumab, the trials that they did for mental health outcomes actually showed improvement in depression and anxiety, in addition to their psoriatic disease. So it was just, they don't really fully know, whereas with brodalumab, you're blocking the receptor and more effectively a lot more, which is why it worked like gangbusters for the skin, but they don't really have the connection as to why it caused or contributed to like worsening depression. And unfortunately, those few attempts and completed suicides. But it's kind of an ongoing open field of interesting research regarding the molecule and the receptor site, because it's even been studied in lupus nephritis. It wasn't effective, but it's got an impact, because anywhere where these cytokines are pleiotropic, and so anywhere you disrupt them, you bind to them, you inhibit them, all have downstream effects in a multifactorial way. So, but it's parsing all that out as to the causal relationship and what you do about it. But it's pretty cool. I like doing it, and especially when you convey it to patients and you can make them feel better. It's really nice.
Well, it is. And I mean, even kind of going back a little bit to like the cardiovascular risk. I mean, one thing you mentioned was like making sure your patients have diabetes screening. Like, yep. I mean, and I feel like so much of rheumatology, not that we end up doing primary care, because I definitely make it very well known that I don't stay up to date with primary care recommendations, et cetera. But I feel like so much of our disease and the diseases that we treat, these patients are at a higher risk anyway. And so it really is so important that we talk to our patients about their own cardiovascular risk. I mean, I'm shocked at how many people don't have controlled hypertension or hyperlip, or know what, you know, they haven't checked a cholesterol. And I don't think this has anything to do with their internal, you know, their internist or their primary care provider, but more that they just haven't gone to see them. And sometimes, you know, they'll say to me, you know, but you always are checking my labs, or I'm always seeing you. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't, I'm not managing those things. And so it just reminded me to make sure that we constantly are thinking about those things and how an overall inflammatory condition will then cause you to have a higher risk for cardiovascular disease, malignancy, et cetera, right?
Right. And even those things that they're studying now, like, I mean, speaking of novel uses of it, with Lilly, I know they're investigating use because they own Mounjaro, and they're also looking at the concurrent use with ixekizumab, because we know when you reduce weight and obesity, psoriasis improves. And it's again, those cytokines, those chemokines, those matrix metalloproteinases. Adipose tissue does confer an inflammatory burden. And if that's the site that you're attracting inflammation to, you were blocking those upstream effects from IL-17 working downward. But it's just knowing the multifactorial ways that you can intervene. Like if people are smoking, I mean, obviously that's kind of a no-brainer. You get them to try and stop. If they're drinking a lot, if they're not getting any structured exercise, if they have diabetes, make sure they're treating it well. Same thing with like hypercholesterolemia. If you have those types of conditions, it's a free way to kind of improve outcomes for just how they feel in general, but also to reduce your inflammatory burden. Because everyone knows that if they have that patient that's morbidly obese, has a bad diet, no exercise, diabetes that they don't treat, it's way more difficult to control than if you're an otherwise quote-unquote healthy, you know, individual in those regards, where you don't have pathologic inflammation stemming from those conditions.
I think it will also be really interesting as we move forward in the next 10, 15 years, like combination things, you know, like to your point, what you just mentioned, it just kind of reminded me, you know, and I think like how it'll be so, I mean, because if you were to have asked me, you know, 15 years ago, would I have seen, you know, what I know now, I'd say no way. They're not going to do that, you know, and now we're doing it, you know? And so won't it be so interesting to see how we do things 10, 15 years from now?
Oh yeah. I mean, even in the context of, like I said, the physician I work with, I mean, they were, all of them were Mayo guys. And when they started practice, the expectation was you were just going to basically be cataloging, watching someone become permanently disabled. And over the course of their careers, they've watched it go from that to like, well, how much clinical remission do we want to get you in?
Right.
Right. And so it's just putting everything in relative context and just being appreciative of it. But they all come with baggage. They all come with risks, different drugs. And knowing that stuff always makes the providers feel more competent, but it also makes your patients trust you more. I think that's why it's a cognitive specialty. The reason that you get asked those questions that I do, that a lot of people in rheumatology space do, is because by ruling out also what something isn't, you can rule in what something is when it's an autoimmune condition. And ruling out a lot of the common stuff that otherwise gets overlooked or missed as being not relevant, even in primary care or specialty care, people can kind of get kind of kicked down the road for a bit. Until they say, well, I just was waiting to see Amanda. And when I asked her, she kind of figured it out. And that's why they come back. They trust us. They keep asking questions, even though it has nothing to do with what you're seeing them for the day for.
Absolutely. And, you know, to that point, even why a lot of times we're the ones that find the other things that, right, you know, maybe got overlooked, to your point. Wow, we've obviously gone through a lot. I feel like I could sit and just talk with you for hours and hours. You know, I don't know if anyone would listen to a podcast that long, but is there anything else really that you feel like we haven't gone over, in particular to IL-17A and F, that you think we should discuss? Or do you feel like we kind of have, you know, really summarized it pretty well? Which I think we have, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, not really. I mean, all the stuff is just kind of boiled down to like the patient in front of you. What do they have for involvement? What's your target? And then knowing the mechanism of how the drug is going to work and the potential side effect profile of it helps you kind of inform why you're going to pick this treatment over that. We have a lot of good options out on the market. And for the context of treating diseases, I think that's why I like it so much, is because I do have a lot of weaponry to like put this out instead of, like I alluded to earlier, where you had like methotrexate, some ineffective therapies, and then a bunch of options that previously didn't exist. So it's a nice time to be practicing in rheumatology. It's a really cool specialty, and I'm glad I kind of fell backwards into it.
Absolutely. So I think you said something like by accident. And I feel like that's what most of us feel like, well, we did, you kind of stumbled upon it, and then it found us, you know, and I couldn't agree more. And I think that's why we're getting such an excitement from APPs coming into this field. And I think, you know, the old days of like, it's old people arthritis and how boring is that, you know, and I think those days are gone, you know, and I think people know that. And that's why we do have this like surge of APPs wanting to come into the field. And I hope that that just continues, because we obviously, with all of these new therapies, we're making more of these diagnoses, which obviously means we're seeing more patients, and we need people to see these patients. So, you know, again, I think it's, and to your point, I feel like it's just really important that we understand how these drugs work, again, in the positive way, but also understanding who they shouldn't really be used for. So, well, with that, you know, that does wrap up our episode for today of Rapcast. Again, thank you so much, Will, for being here, sharing your expertise, not only on IL-17 inhibition, but also just, you know, life. Because I feel like whenever we chat, I feel like we always talk more about other things as well. But I think all things that are very clinically relevant that can really help APPs, you know, physicians, patients. So it's always such a joy having you here.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Amanda.
Well, we'll keep asking you back, because again, I find you to be, you know, again, just so knowledgeable. And for our listeners, you know, we really hope that you found this discussion to be insightful and valuable for your practice. For more information and resources, please go to rap.org. Make sure you stay connected to us on social media at RAPAPP on Twitter, or X, I guess is now is what it's called, and Instagram at RoomAPP. Thank you for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe to Rapcast on your favorite podcast platform to stay updated on our latest episodes. Until next time, friends, have a great day.